This is Scott Becker with an episode of the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Larry Tuber. Dr. Tuber is a very bright neurosurgeon who's also been in the Air Force of the Army as a surgeon at one time, I believe. And he'll give us some of his thoughts on what he sees going on today and so forth. Dr. Tuber, let me ask you to first just introduce yourself. And then I'll ask you, you know, where do you see this going with the coronavirus and the impacts and so forth?
My name is Larry Tuber. I'm a neurosurgeon, semi-retired. I think in my view, based on the information available, that this is a serious situation, not to be ignored. I think CDC guidelines are the best guidance we're going to get. And it appears it's going to have to pass through the human pool, either by way of natural infection or in the future vaccination before we're going to be clear of the problem.
Any prognosis on how much damage and the time frame on that and so forth? I mean, it's so hard for us as lay people to filter out all that we read on this. You know, you get anywhere from a couple million people dying in the United States to a couple hundred thousand dying in the United States. And obviously worldwide, bigger and different numbers. Are you starting to come to any sense of that and sort of filtering through the numbers as to what this is likely to look like? And I'll first talk about clinically, morbidity-wise, those kinds of things, and then more so about economically.
Well, from the medical perspective, it's going to be devastating. It's going to be a test of the entire healthcare system. If it can be spread out over a period of time, it can be very manageable. Kind of like 400 guys you're trying to feed in 30 minutes rather than 4 hours. It's that simple. It's going to wash through the human pool. As far as the economy, I think a deep recession would be very welcome because it could be a lot worse. It's going to destroy huge amounts of wealth, displace a lot of people, and create huge socioeconomic change that's going to reverberate for many quarters and probably a couple of years,
if not longer. And what do you see as like the right approach to this? I mean, there's everything from complete lockdown to locking down the elderly to not doing very much and let it work through the natural human herd. What is sort of your sense of this, and having looked at things over the last couple of decades, what is your sense of the right approach to take on this?
Well, my sense is very simple. If you are not overreacting, you're underreacting. And if you're not a bit of an alarmist, you're not paying enough attention. This problem is always going to be ahead of us. Now, if we were making decisions based on how a fire chief would behave, then we'll probably would be on top of this, but we're not, because we're in a democracy and we have to make huge compromises in our democratic form of government and our society. So we're always going to be behind the power curve on this thing. As far as testing goes, it's not real time. It's not widely available. So I always tell people some really simple things when they ask me what to do. And that is, number one is, if somebody's sick, assume they have it. If they're not sick, assume they're a carrier. If you can touch it, you can get it. Cash, coin, credit cards, and everything else. In order to slow the velocity of the spread, one must stay away from everybody else. And that means to go into a maximum mitigation posture. I believe that the lockdown is probably too late where it's being applied. And it should be applied in communities in a phased-in way. For instance, to have collections of people in bars all night, bad idea. To have folks going to tanning salons and hair benders and that sort of thing, bad idea. To have big gatherings, concerts, church, country club after golfing at the bar, all that, bad idea. Doesn't mean everything's got to be shut down hard right now, but certainly this phase-in has got to happen, because we do not respond very well to the local government folks coming in and shutting a community down hard, cold, and fast. But we will respond to the creeping of control. And that's the phased-in shutdown before the thing turns into a wildfire. And eventually it is going to get into a very severe shutdown if it does move across the country as it is in New York. And when I say that, I mean commercial air travel will be on a full ground stop. Interstate commerce is going to stop on interstate highways except for essential cargo hauling. All of those kinds of things. That could eventually happen if the projections hold true.
Right. At some point, you'll go to a full stop to try and quarantine everybody if things keep on moving at the pace we're starting to move at. But at the same time, if we take some of these social distancing measures earlier and harder, you know, we might be able to slow this down some and really have a positive impact to where at some point, health-wise, we recover quicker and the economy recovers quicker.
It's a velocity of spread issue. We're going to have to, I believe most people would agree on this, that when this spreads to the human pool, it's probably going to be like measles, polio, that folks are going to have an immunity to it, and we're going to suppress it or control it. But it has got to get into the human pool, and it has to spread widely, and hopefully we can do that over a couple of years rather than many months. That's where we're at.
You got it. And that's what they start to talk about, this concept of an immunity to it, plus the vaccinations to it. And that's sort of the end game, and hopefully sooner rather than later. And then they are starting to talk about all these potential treatments for it. And again, you can't talk to anybody that really has great insight as to whether these will work or not. Do you have any sense of some of these thoughts on treatments for this? Any sense at all? Thus far from what you're reading and seeing, just as a very observant medical physician, any thoughts so far?
I believe based on what I've seen, there is no effective treatment for the viral illness in terms of the way an antibiotic would be used to treat sinusitis. Amoxicillin, sinusitis, cure. It is supportive care for the sequela of pathophysiologic problems that develop as a result of the viral illness. Will we be able to treat the viral illness eventually like we treat shingles and herpes and other sorts of viral conditions with acyclovir and the like? Yeah, probably. That's going to take some time. We're going to be lucky if two things don't happen. Number one, there is not a fall rebound. Come July, August, we're good to go. Numbers are coming down fast. Then we go back to business as usual. We all get together because we missed each other. Then October, November, spike again. We'll be lucky if that doesn't happen. The second thing is serial mutation. Why did this virus jump from a animal pool to a human pool? Well, it did through a mutation event, I suspect. And that mutation was either internally designed within the virus or it was spontaneous. I bet it was spontaneous. If it had a spontaneous mutation, probably going to have another one. That means the vaccination is going to be effective for the mutation it is built for. If it mutates, we're behind again.
Let me ask you another question. And again, it's they've been sort of debunked. It's thought of as crazy politicking. But there were some early rumors that this came out of some sort of bioweapons lab. You're one of the smartest, well-versed guy I know. Is that complete just BS, or is there any need to investigate that kind of stuff further?
Well, my first response would be, I have no clue. I wasn't in the lab. I wasn't involved. I have no clue. I wouldn't be blown away by it, but what the hell does it matter? It's here. We're going to have to deal with it. The Chinese first had it. They're probably the ones, if this allegation is true, were involved in this engineering. They controlled it. Maybe they sacrificed a bunch of their folks, got it under control. Now it's throughout the world. It's going to destroy their economy as well. It's going to bounce back into their country. They didn't just shove this virus out onto the globe, think they're going to lock their borders down and not get this virus back. So in my view, I think it's nonsense, but I have no evidence. I have no information. You just respond to what you get. You eat what you're served, and this is what we're served.
And another question. You've led serious, successful business organizations. You founded several of them. You led a magnificent practice. What's your advice right now to somebody running a business or a practice or a healthcare facility at this point in time? What advice do you have for them?
At the facility level, I would shut it down. I would shut it down for two reasons. Number one, it's a potential source of contamination of your patients and your staff. But more importantly, we're going to have a social responsibility, meaning that how can you do elective surgery in your facility when the hospital across the street is on a war footing and is hoarding face masks? Can't do it. Can't make an argument for it. It's kind of like the Medicare carve out. We're going to do this, but we're not going to do Medicare and Medicaid. You can do it, but it's not socially responsible. Also, in the after effect, the after analysis, after this is all said and done, it's like the single guy on the lifeboat that's full of women and children. Ain't going to be looked at too favorably. So one has to consider that. The second thing is just the practical nature of conducting a elective practice in a contaminated environment. Folks are going to have to tighten it down a little bit. I mean, clinics are still going to operate, but they're going to have to be posturing and positioning themselves for significant changes in the book they do in terms of elective work. Clinics require staff. Staff have families. They have kids. They have parents. They have brothers and sisters and all that sort of thing. This is going to be a huge tax on these people at home as well as at work. But on the other hand, they need to make a buck. They got to work. So you're going to have to find a balance between conducting a practice, a business, and a clinic, taking care of your folks now, and your social responsibility in the bigger picture, and relative not just to the hospital across the street, but the hospitals in New York, Des Moines, Minneapolis, Chicago, New Orleans, California. You know, these hospitals, these small facilities should be doing inventory of critical supplies. I'm talking about the simple stuff, masks, gloves, gowns, and the like, as well as ventilator equipment. Tubing, that stuff's all disposable. You can't reuse vent tube. It's got to be thrown, pitched. So you need to start thinking about inventorying and allocating these what are now going to be scarce resources to folks that need them right now. You're going to get back up. You're going to be back in business. You're still going to be printing money. It's going to be fine. But now is the time to do a stand down and start helping the other folks in the industry.
Well, and I think that's right on. And you mentioned this fascinating thing that's lost in our political environment is different places. You've got completely different polemics and not this concept of, yes, we have to solve this, but yes, people got to still figure out how to make a living if they can. And if you were the czar for the day, and I know you've been the czar for the day in other situations, what would you recommend in terms of this management of slowing the disease and at the same time not killing the economy? What is there any, if you were czar, what would be your thoughts on it?
Well, if I was czar, I'd resign right away because I would not want this decision. That's probably what I'd do. I'd be involved in the local government in South Dakota, to the extent that they are in the middle of making this decision on closing the economy down. I tell you, it is a no-win situation. Zero. No win. It's going to be the toughest thing they have ever done, other than perhaps putting their dog down. If you look back at that 1906 earthquake in San Francisco, that there's this huge fire throughout the city, and the military has got to make a decision. They got to create a fire break. So they go in there and they start blowing up buildings, businesses, homes, churches, all this sort of thing. Normal, good buildings way out in front of the fire, blowing them up. Tough decision. Lots of pissed off people. Well, that's where we are. We haven't seen this kind of a problem in 100 years. Spanish flu, earthquake in San Francisco, comes around about every century. It's a big deal. It's just, we're going to get through this. We're going to get through it economically. We can all have an opinion. We're all entitled to an opinion. But at the end of the day, we're still going to have our opinion and other folks are going to be dead. So we have got to take the most cautious approach to preserve, to protect the infirm, the elderly, the disadvantaged in our society. for folks to be going out, a little bit off tangent, but for folks to be going out and buying up test kits to do tests on asymptomatic patients when there are dense epidemic areas in the United States is completely irresponsible. It's, again, a clear example of the single guy in a lifeboat full of women and children. And he's not the guy on the tiller.
And what about, Dr. Tuber, what about, like, the you were around, you're in the 57 flu. Were you too young to recall that? Because that supposedly was a very bad flu, much worse than the normal flu. And we've seen all these ones, swine flu, bird flu, you know, the SARS, the MERS, but none of them ended up amounting to that much at the end of the day. I mean, a lot of concern, but not that much. Any perspective from things like that, or are you just too young at that point to have any sense of it?
Well, I was born in 56, so I was too young, but looking at the history, looking at the medical history of these various extraordinary endemics or epidemics, in this situation, a pandemic, that when we talk about flus, we're talking about illnesses, we're talking about viruses in that situation, or perhaps the typhoid Mary issue, these little mini epidemics that they all are different, but they all are the same. They are different to the extent that if you try to model this problem based on SARS, MERS, the Spanish flu, or the 57 event, you are going to have some commonality. But don't think it's going to behave exactly the same. If you're modeling and looking at this and think this is a mimic reproduction of the event that happened in 57 or 18, it's going to surprise you. And it's going to be a problem. So you model it, you respond based on historic evidence, but you be prepared. This baby is going to twist off and is going to surprise you and come around, flank in, hit the inside of the head. So that would be my view on this.
Thank you. Dr. Tuber, a pleasure to speak to you. You're always a clear and smart thinker and just a pleasure to visit with you and hear your thoughts on it. Thank you very much.
Good to talk to you, Scott. Thank you.